It is Wednesday, March 27th, and hey, we have one more day after today before it's a long weekend. How good. But you know what else is good? This week marks 101 years since Forest and Bird was formed. So happy 101st birthday, Forest and Bird, up the kakapo. And here's hoping this year's Bird of the Year doesn't get any overseas influence, huh? I'm looking at you, John Oliver. We are, though, of course, talking about international interference today. So, kia ora, this is Newsable. I'm Imogen, and this is what's worth talking about. Why did China-based hackers attack New Zealand's parliamentary systems, and what exactly did they access? We have everything you need to know. Microsoft New Zealand CEO is on the pod to talk about the company's latest AI technology, bringing Today or Māori to the masses. The weird traditions Victorians believed were essential when a loved one dies, we're talking the era, not the Australian state, and the extraordinary lengths one man in the US has gone to shake up this year's presidential election. All that's coming up in a moment here on Newsable.
Newsable takes time and resources to produce. Please support our mahi and visit stuff.co.nz/support.
What do you do when a friend lets you down? That is the situation New Zealand finds itself in after the revelations yesterday about a hack attack on Parliament linked to China. The hack happened in 2021, but the announcement came hard on the heels of the US and the UK also accusing China of being behind malicious cyber attacks. The head of New Zealand spy agency has said the attack was halted before any vital data was obtained and that he expected the hacking was undertaken to try to get information that would give a strategic advantage. So what should New Zealand do now? Well, to try and work through the issue, we're joined by Stuff's chief political correspondent, Tova O'Brien. Tova, lovely to have you back.
Kia ora, lovely to be here, Emo.
Tova, it appears New Zealand won't be sanctioning anyone, unlike the US and the UK. Does that mean our trade links with China are just that big and too big to be causing any upset?
Yeah, the very biggest, and there is that, but also, and this is the greater roadblock, Emo, we don't have legislation that allows us to impose sanctions unilaterally in New Zealand. So unlike our Five Eyes partners, the UK and US, among them that you raised, we can't impose sanctions basically without the United Nations saying so. They need to put forward a UN resolution. And the example in kind of conflict with that is when we changed the law in 2022 to be able to impose those autonomous sanctions on Russia in response to the war in Ukraine. But other than that, we're pretty well hamstrung, which arguably in the case of China, our biggest trading partner, is both a roadblock and perhaps a bit of a security blanket for the government as well, because it can kick that mega move into the too hard basket and not risk serious retaliation from China.
Yeah, wowee. Do you think this could change our relationship with China in any way? New Zealand has been seen as having a special bond with China. So many first-time agreements have happened with Beijing.
Yeah, indeed. And Judith Collins, the Minister for the Spies, still describing China as a very good friend. It is a complicated and multifaceted relationship that we have with China. I think despite proclaiming our independent foreign policy, of which New Zealand's very proud of and famous for, we are also often caught between the interests of our Five Eyes partner, the United States, and our biggest trading partner, China. The Trade Minister, Todd McClay, saying that he's not expecting any trade retaliation. That potentially seems a bit premature, because even if China hasn't officially retaliated in the past, we have seen New Zealand goods held up on Chinese ports after the government made a decision about Huawei, banning it from the 5G tender process, for example. And although we haven't been able to kind of link up or prove that cause and effect, there have been coincidences like that. So I think the fact that both Chris Hipkins and Chris Luxon, former Prime Minister and current Prime Minister, chose not to raise this when they had meetings with senior Chinese officials, the Chinese president in the case of Chris Hipkins when he went to Beijing, and Chris Luxon when he was hosting the Chinese foreign minister just last week, the fact that they chose not to raise this with them speaks to how delicate that relationship is.
The talk yesterday from the spy bosses seemed to be very reassuring. We caught it before any sensitive data was accessed. Do you reckon more information over the scale of all this might emerge, or is it going to be like tight lid on it now that they've sort of let the cat out of the bag the littlest bit possible?
Yeah, it seems tight lid on it. That's part of the reason they're saying that it took so long to tell us about it in the first place. In 2021, New Zealand did actually name China as a country behind a state-sponsored attack on Microsoft in that same year. That was also the same year that this attack took place, and yet we're only finding out about it now, bearing in mind an attack on Parliament, our democratic institutions, our MPs is obviously on another level entirely. But the GCSB spy boss is saying they go through this very careful, forensic, robust process to identify the attack and what's been taken. Then they ameliorate any vulnerabilities or gaps in the system before even thinking of going public with something like this. Though I would also say it seems like the greater hold up, that big 3-year gap between the attack and us finding out, was more to do with coordinating with our Five Eyes partners, the UK and US. The spies would say that that's because to coordinate the message, it has more impact. It also likely is that New Zealand is keen to hide behind the big guys when you're sending these pretty enormous missives across the bows to superpowers that our economy relies so fundamentally upon.
After these latest revelations, do you reckon the government will look to beef up the spy agencies in any way?
Yeah, like every single government agency, government department, every ministry, they always want more money every budget. And the spies did actually get a fairly significant bump back in 2022. There was an extra $50 million top up, I think, for the GCSB. With cuts across the board in the public sector, it seems unlikely that anyone's going to be getting a massive boost. Though with something like this going public, that could create perhaps a public appetite and impetus for more money to beef up the security agency. So we'll have to wait and see for my version of Christmas Day, May 30th, Budget Day.
How many sleeps is it now?
That's a very good point, actually. I haven't worked that out.
I think it's 60-odd. Don't worry, I got your back. 60-odd. Stuff's Chief Political Correspondent, Tovah O'Brien. Always great to unpack things like this with you.
Lovely speaking with you, Emma. Thank you.
China's embassy in Wellington has strongly denied allegations that it was involved in hacking New Zealand's parliament, and a spokesperson said the government was completely barking up the wrong tree.
Yesterday, we talked about Instagram's move to automatically start limiting the amount of political content it shows you from accounts you don't already follow. So then we asked you on the NZ Stuff Instagram if you were okay with that. 35% said you were fine with Insta making those changes for you, but 65% said, nah, not happy with it. Personally, I don't think this was well enough signposted, and that's why I'm unhappy with the move. However, I am all for trying to obviously keep a lid on mis and disinformation. So I suppose we'll just have to wait and see if this Instagram move actually makes any difference when it comes to all of that.
While the explosion of AI into our lives can sometimes be a source of concern, on the flip side, it can also be a powerful force for good. So how's this for a great example? Today, Stuff is announcing it's going to drastically increase the number of articles in Te Reo Māori on its platforms, and that includes us here at Newsable as well. How are we going to do it? Well, it's a combination of using AI and the human touch. Stuff is partnering with Microsoft and local translation software company Straker to deliver this, and Microsoft Aotearoa New Zealand's Managing Director Vanessa Sorensen is with us now. Kia ora, welcome to Newsable.
Oh, kia ora, thank you for having me.
Vanessa, let's start with this AI, this translation tool. Can you tell me what it is and how it's going to work?
It's basically a translation tool to boost more and more Te Reo speakers across Aotearoa, and to really and truly leverage it in so many different media types, from education to print media to digital. It's just really a neural model that's going to continually learn. And I remember just hearing a goal of all of us wanting to have about 1 million Te Reo speakers. This is truly going to help. I know myself on my own learning journey, everything was sort of just single words. And that's been around for a long time. Great starting point. But this is now going to be continuous learning as we use it more and more and more.
Stuff already does have some translated content on its site. So what does a tool like this allow us to do in terms of the scale of that translated content?
I think it's just getting it in the hands of more and more humans, quite frankly. You are really ahead of your time, and so have many, many other organisations. What this is going to bring is the brains of our platform continuing to learn. So the more and more people that are leveraging it, and that's why it's an open platform. It's open for everybody. And that was critical of this partnership. And making sure that we all respected the tonga, right? This is about increasing more Te Reo speakers, quite frankly. And to be able to read it and then translate it and see this model continuing to learn, the hope is that we truly just see it expanding and yeah, growing and just everybody embracing this beautiful language.
And what's your view, Vanessa, on the importance of maintaining a human touch? I mean, specifically with Te Reo Māori, Māori is so much about person to person, right? People, he tangata, he tangata, he tangata.
100%. In fact, that's what's so beautiful about this project, because you still need the creativity of humans, right? You just think about it. We want more accessibility of this beautiful language, and that's what it's going to create. And so for us, this is why a lot of our AI is called co-pilots, because you want a co-pilot with you. And that's exactly what this program's about. And it's to bring that beautiful language to life. In fact, within Microsoft, we had about 25 people go through a year-long Māori language, basically certification. But then they lost it because they weren't reading more articles. They weren't being able to speak with family members. And so I just think that the opportunity for our school children, for our learners, just to leverage this incredible tool, it's just going to become part of every day.
How do you think tools like this can help support Indigenous languages globally?
Well, we are definitely world leading here. You know, it was actually a beautiful time about 18 months ago that Grant Straker actually met up with Brad Smith in Seattle. Brad's our chairman of Microsoft. Incredible, incredible man. And Grant said, you know, we've got this goal of 1 million Te Reo speakers in New Zealand. And, you know, would you take a bet on us? Would you, you know, sponsor us to really bring something together? Because this is something we truly do want to do as Microsoft. You know, we want to walk the talk. And so the fact that this has come to life in such a beautiful way, working with iwi to make sure that we are not taking something and commercializing it, but truly embracing the opportunity for the beautiful language, Microsoft's watching this to therefore look at how we can roll this out at a global level.
What are some of the other ways that this translation technology will be used outside of news media?
Well, as I say, education. You know, we actually launched Namotu, which is the Minecraft version in Te Reo, about 6 years ago. And that was a really special moment for me when Satya Nadella, our global CEO, came to New Zealand. And he went to St. Joseph's School in Orake, and he watched my son learning Te Reo through Namotu. And that was the start of something beautiful, that the culture that Satya felt about our country, the kids embracing learning through gaming, and now the opportunity to constantly read articles as we're wanting to learn this beautiful language. I think it's going to start there, but it's going to be infused in our universities. I mean, I just see the opportunities growing massively.
Microsoft Aotearoa New Zealand's Managing Director, Vanessa Sorensen. Really interesting stuff. Appreciate your time. Ngā mihi nui.
I am still going to reveal what one man in the US has done in a bid to stop both Trump and Biden from winning this year's presidential election. There's not really any words for it, actually. You're just going to have to hear me explain it. But remember to chuck us a like and a follow wherever you get your podcasts if you're enjoying what you're hearing and you want to stay up to date with all the latest news and current affairs. No one really wants to talk about funerals. They're not exactly a pleasant topic. But somehow it's all a bit different if you're talking about the Victorian era, when funerals were a spectacle. Processions, plumed horses, special clothes and jewellery, not to mention the whole issue of body snatching. A fascinating background such as this proved irresistible to New Zealand author Deborah Challenor, who, for good measure, threw in a first female undertaker as well. Deborah, hello.
Hello.
Have you always been fascinated by death and its traditions?
Well, I have a bit. I've always been interested in cemeteries because they tell such interesting stories. When you're saying that every headstone is the full stop to someone's life, it puts a different slant on a cemetery. It's not a miserable place. It's a place to go to think about, well, this is where somebody's life's ended up.
Wowie, I love that, the full stop of everybody's life. Deborah, you are well recognised for your historical research. You've received a New Zealand Order of Merit. What did you find the most fascinating when you delved into Victorian funeral traditions?
The relationship that people used to have with the actual deceased person, they were still a part of the family and they lived and loved their dead people. And that's what I found most interesting. And also the customs that they used to help them cope with that.
Well, what, like, such as what?
Well, there were some weird ones, I thought, like covering mirrors so that a spirit of a dead person couldn't look at you through a mirror and take you with it to the other world. But seeing the other world was heaven, I didn't think that would be such a bad thing if that's what you believed. And you were supposed to carry a dead person out of the house feet first, because if you took them out head first, they could look at back into the house and beckon someone to follow them. And if you go back even earlier than that, there were the professional sin eaters who ate a meal over a dead body, and that was supposed to draw the sin out of the body and be taken into the person who ate the meal, and that person walked around the town full of other people's sins. I don't think I'd rather be on the dole than do that one.
And Deborah, bodies at this time, I believe, were a source of income. Is that why the whole body snatching industry emerged?
Well, that came out in the 18th century when the medical fraternity was really getting going and doing a lot of exploration and development. Mm. And they wanted human bodies to experiment on, and there were various bits of legislation in England and France, I think, that only allowed anatomists 6 bodies a year to work on, and they didn't go far because you couldn't preserve them. So people started pinching them out of graves, and they became the body snatchers, stealing bodies and selling them to the medical people for money, and it all got a wee bit out of hand, really, at the end of the 1830s when you had Burke and Hare, who were caught in Scotland for doing it and selling it.
Deborah Challenor, author of the new novel series Black Silk and Sympathy. Wonderful to chat. Can't wait to get my hands on the book.
Thank you very much.
Elections anywhere in the world can bring out the weird and wacky. Think parties or independents running on really niche policies, sometimes even only one niche policy and one niche policy only. But one man in the US has taken all of this weird and wacky one step further, because Dustin Ebby from Texas has legally changed his name to literally anybody else. Literally anybody else. Those three words, that's now his legal name. Literally anybody else is now his legal name. And he has announced that he's running for president of the United States at this year's election. He's done it because he says he's unsatisfied with both Trump and Biden, calling one of them the king of debt and the other just an 81-year-old, respectively. So he says he's giving other people an option to tick on the ballot box. However, in order to even get on that ballot paper, he needs more than 100,000 signatures by May, which even he admits is unlikely. So literally anybody else is asking people to simply write literally anybody else on their voting papers instead on the day if his name, literally anybody else, is not there for them to tick. Are you with me? Let's just say good luck to literally anybody else. That is Newsable for today. I'm Imogen Wells, and I wonder, hang on a minute, if he'll change his name back after the Prezi election. It's a long way away. November.
If you liked listening to this pod, help us make more like this. Visit stuff.co.nz/support.